This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
So, movies coming up. Daddy Day Camp. Nancy Drew, is there a half term imminent?
There is a half term imminent, as I think we've already been told by the travel reports, which are saying if you're thinking of travelling, don't, because there's a half term imminent.
Rendition and Stardust, The Dark is Rising, Last Legion, all that kind of stuff. Also, your thoughts on the number one movie, which we'll get to in just a moment, because the box office top 10 looks like this. At 10 is The Invasion.
Which, of course, we weren't shown by the distributors, but I paid to go and see in the cinema. And, I mean, it's rubbish. It's a rubbish and unnecessary remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. But you really do question why it is that some films will simply not get shown to you because the distributors think there's no chance of you saying anything nice about them. Whereas other things, which are far worse, do get to preview screen. I mean, Invasion is tripe, but it's not the worst tripe we've seen this year.
Black Sheep is the UK's number 9.
Well, as somebody in the office has told us, they asked me last week whether I thought Black Sheep was a good date movie, and I said it depends on the calibre of person that you're taking with you. And apparently things, you know, it's a good judge of character. Now, I would say if you're my kind of person, then going on a date to Black Sheep is a brilliant idea. Apparently it's not a brilliant idea for everyone. Not everyone feels the same way.
What kind of relationship then would start with Black Sheep as that opening movie?
Well, I think a relationship based on, you know, integrity, trust, you know, the possibility of taking over the world at some point. I remember the first day that I went on with Linda was Near Dark, the Kathy Bigelow movie, which is absolutely blood-drenched vampire movie, and I think that set us on a good path. And so I think a killer sheep movie from New Zealand is a good start. But what do I know? What was the first date movie that you went on with
Mrs. Mayo? I just realised it was a Charles Bronson film.
Did you take and see Death Wish?
It was Death Wish 2.
That's fantastic, and that's really offensive. Of all of the Death Wish ones, that's the most offensive one.
I didn't know that.
And who's at the beginning of Death Wish 2 in that most offensive of sequences? Jeff Goldblum. Jeff Goldblum is one of the guys who runs in through the door wearing a leather jacket. I mean, Death Wish 2 is the... I mean, if you took me to see Death Wish 2, we wouldn't still be together in the way that we are now.
So this is quite interesting. So you can judge the soundness and long-term success of a relationship
by the first movie that you saw together and your reaction to it.
So obviously, if the first movie was something like, you know, Love Actually, or Four Weddings, it's a bit of a cop-out.
It is.
Isn't it? Because it's, you know, straightforward, easy, straightforward success. But if you're really adventurous and see a gore-filled vampire movie, or in my case,
Death Wish 2. Death Not Wish even 2. Death Wish. Death Wish 2. That's such a strange choice.
I didn't know that. If you can do better than that, if Mark's interesting theory about the longevity of a relationship based on that first movie that you went to see holds water, we'd like to know how long you've been together, who your other half is, and what that film was, and we'll kind of analyse your relationship in one easy paragraph.
Let me just leap ahead and say that both 8 and 7 are Indian movies that weren't national press screened here but have opened and gone into the top. So if anybody's seen them, if you'd care to have a go at those titles, please let us know.
This is Laga Chinari Mine Dog.
Very good. And?
And Bull Balaya.
Yep. Reviews happily accepted.
Bull Balaya, Crawfish Pyre.
Yeah.
Sheremia.
Be very careful where you go with the Carpenters.
6. I'd forgotten that was another one of
I love the Carpenters.
Well, I like the Carpenters.
Not as much as I like the Carpenters.
Goodbye to Love, probably the finest.
Yeah, but also they lost a lot of their fan base then because people thought that the guitar solo at the end of Goodbye to Love was rocking out in a way which was unacceptable. They also got an awful lot of bad press because it was realised that Superstar, which incidentally is, was a song that was inappropriate for Karen to be singing because it appeared to be a song about a one-night stand.
Do you think there's some people who are taking that a little bit too seriously?
No, I think Carpenters, you know, devotees are to be loved and cherished.
The Sugar Snaps would do a very good version.
They wouldn't. The Sugar Peas would have covered it really well.
Atonement at 6.
He's great, she's not.
Run, Fat Boy, Run.
Finally off the number one spot. I mean, finally. But, you know, hey, at last, the best comedy of the year has finally fallen off the number one spot.
Kingdom at 4.
Which is two different movies warring to get out. One of them's an action movie, one of them's a serious movie. The action movie kind of wins out, but it's just a shame it doesn't quite mesh together in the way it ought to.
Heartbreak Kid at 3.
Why remake it? Why remake it in this particular form? I mean, I did sit there thinking, much as I love the Farrellys, my patience is worn out with this. And it's one of those Ben Stiller movies in which Ben Stiller, is he funny or is he creepy? I think I'm going with creepy.
Number 2, Resident Evil Extinction.
Unbelievably. But one imagines it's in 2 and then it'll be out next week. You know, Mila Jovovich in the latest instalment, this time directed by Russell Mulcahy, most famous for giving us the Duran Duran videos.
Wasn't she Joan of Arc?
She was Joan of Arc.
Was she better at Joan of Arc? Because you hated that as well.
Well, Joan of Arc, she hated. I mean, the famous thing about Joan of Arc was that they shot most of it, and then they had to go back and do massive reshoots. And because she was, she had a very successful modelling career, she didn't want to redo the haircut. So there is the most staggering thing about Joan of Arc is not that she went to the flames boldly for her cause, or that she was a paranoid schizophrenic hearing voice, but the most incredible thing about it was that she had an ever-changing hairstyle. I mean, literally, a hairstyle that was like a miracle of Lourdes. Every time you looked at her, her hair was different.
The heart, oh, we've done that, right. So, Extinction, any, so good?
No, rubbish.
Oh, rubbish, okay. And the UK's number one movie is Ratatouille.
Ratatatatatouille.
Now, you were generally unimpressed, so on the basis of the fact that a whole lot of people will have seen it, be interested to know what you made of Ratatouille, if you have seen it in the last 7 days, mayo@bbc.co.uk.
And very quickly say, I got a very well-argued email from somebody who works at Disney, whose opinion I appreciate, who said, in regards to your comment, for the record, Pixar never market test their movies, and no matter what you think, they are artists, and they would never think about market testing.
That's sort of reassuring to know that.
Well, yes, I mean, I still think it looks like a movie that's been demographically sorted out, but I absolutely take on board that if that's true, then good for them.
Phil, on this email,
I'm sure it is true.
Mark asked for reactions to Ratatouille after his underwhelming review last week. I took my 5.5-year-old daughter to see it and was ready to disagree with Mark after everyone else said how great it was. But, he says, the doctor was right. And then he puts grrr in brackets. It was too long, the pace really sagged at points, and it lacked some decent big laughs. Yes, the animation was stunning, but unlike Toy Story, The Incredibles, Finding Nemo, it didn't show me anything new, just the same old cliche view of Paris. And unlike the others, there was little children. There were unlike the others, there was little children. Oh, there was little
children
could relate to. No child characters, and the problems were all adult ones. In the end, the film's only conceit was that a rat could cook, and I'm sure that was enough. The short at the beginning lifted. Was superb, though.
The short at the beginning is absolutely fantastic, and it is short.
But there's a fantastic Pixar tradition of having a nice little movie. Don't be late. Get there beforehand so you can see that.
Yeah, because that short, I mean, it's like 4 or 5 minutes, and it's laugh-out-loud funny, and I thought there were more laughs in that and more invention in that than there was in the rest of Ratatouille. But as I said, I think thinking that something looks like it's been market-tested and actually saying it has been market-tested are two different things. But as I said, this person who worked for the company but seemed to be speaking with a passion said, whatever you think, they don't market-test them.
Sophie Dahl was here a few minutes ago. We were talking about the novella because her first book was a novella, which I said, though I probably shouldn't have, it was widely interpreted as being her relationship with Mick Jagger.
I know.
It's what everyone said.
You just said with Mick, like everyone knew.
Well, it was Mick Jagger, obviously.
I didn't know.
Anyway, and then E.M. Ward says, stop using this term novella. It has to have a Wendepunkt.
Yes.
And this from Carolyn.
Vorsprung durch Technik.
Says E.M. Ward is talking about the quite strict structural requirements for the German novella. The Wendepunkt is a sudden plot twist. Death in Venice is a prime example. But you and the good doctor are quite correct in your definition for the form in English. It is worth pointing out that E.M. Ward was emailing from Cambridge, and this one from Carolyn, Dean.
Has he got letters after his name?
Carolyn is from Oxford, so let battle be joined. Who, E.M. Ward?
Yeah. Is he doctor? Is he PhD?
It's just one's Carolyn Larrington and the other's just E.M. Ward.
Okay. And what does...
But she's a senior dean.
And she says...
I just said what she said.
Oh, she's fine. Okay. No, so for
that was
two.
It.
Okay, sorry.
Did you want more?
No, I just thought
she said we're right. You and the good doctor are quite correct in your definition.
That's fine. She's from Cambridge?
Yes.
Well, that's fine. We'll side
no,
with her.
No, E.M. Ward was Cambridge. She's Oxford.
Oh, in that case, we don't side with her.
That may well... Why not?
Well, I don't know,
Well, that's ridiculous.
Up Cambridge, down Oxford.
Why?
I don't know.
It's just stupid.
I went to Manchester. What do I know?
Exactly. And we've already proved many times in the last fortnight that you're wrong on so many things. Anyway, what's going to be up first?
The first thing we can start off with Stardust. Because it's half term, I'm going to be clear about this. Because it's half term, I think it is my duty to do the half term movie. So we will start and we'll try and rattle through them. And there is a whole bunch of them out. I have to tell you, it's not a great pack.
On the subject of first date movies, Rhiannon in London.
Yeah.
Simon and Mark, the first movie I saw my man with was Bend It Like Beckham.
Oh, really?
With a talk from the director. As the credits began to roll, he hurried me out of the Clapham Picture House, desperate to get out of there before the director started. Then he said to me, present company excluded, that was the worst 2 hours of my entire life. That was 5 years ago. We got engaged last month.
I like Bend It Like Beckham. It's the film of IKEA's that I think she's the least wooden in.
Nick in Derby, the first film I took my wife to see was Boogie Nights.
That's a stunning first date.
The divorce is imminent, says Nick. Not sure if the two events are related. So clearly it doesn't work. You see, Connor, on your theory, first date Boogie Nights, yeah. You know, challenging film that, you know...
But also it depends on one's reaction to it. I mean, I when I was younger, I took somebody to see the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and halfway through, she turned to me and she said, "This is horrible. I'm leaving." And I said, "Okay," and she said, "Aren't you coming with me?" And I said, "No, I want to see the rest of the film." And that was the end of that.
This from Mary: the first movie with my husband of 22 years was The Natural with Robert Redford.
Oh wow!
It was so boring. My date asked me what time it was. I held out my hand to show him my watch, and he held my hand, and the rest is history.
I think that's lovely.
Isn't it nice?
I think that's really lovely. I'm going to meet Robert Redford on Monday, and I'll tell her that. Him, that. I just call Robert Redford a her. Can I have that?
You'd better get that right by the time you do the interview. And this from John. I took a girlfriend to see Saw 1. Yeah, the relationship didn't last the length of the film.
Okay,
half term. Saw 1, not a good idea. Here's a bunch of stuff which might be interesting for you.
Stardust, not to be confused with the sequel to That'll Be the Day.
Just David Essex classic.
I love that, in which he writes the rock opera Ave Maria and then ends up taking an overdose in front of Adam Faith, as far as I remember. An interesting little film, but not that. Okay, PG-rated family fantasy adapted from a novel by Neil Gaiman. Brief setup of the plot, because the plot's very complicated. There's a place called Wall, and beyond the boundaries, the place is called Wall because there's a long wall in the middle of it, and beyond the boundaries of the wall there is a magical kingdom, and a star falls to Earth, falls to the magical kingdom, and the star is played by Claire Danes, because, you know, it's a magical star. Meanwhile, over in the real world, our hero says to his beloved, Sienna Miller, that he will go and capture for her the star and bring it back, and therefore she will fall in love with him and marry him. Meanwhile, in the kingdom, there is a succession battle going on, brought about by the imminent death of the current king. And I think you'll have no difficulty recognising the voice.
What's the check for ocean?
Ocean.
Ocean.
Yeah, right. You'll have difficulty recognising the voice because that is a clip from Once. So shall we try this again? Are we lined up for the clip from...
That was the Irish king.
That was the Irish king, yes, that's right. Let's try this once more. And you'll have no difficulty, I think, recognising this voice.
Okay, well, we're looking for a clip for Stardust. So it was nicely. So what we're going to do is...
I can just move straight on, otherwise I can do a version of it.
Okay, I think it might have disappeared
okay,
into
fine.
The system.
Okay, fine, so it was a picture at all. So a whole bunch of famous people in the film. Now, in some ways, Stardust is what Ken Russell's mum would have described as a British picture. Ken Russell's mum used to have this thing that if she wanted to go to the movies and there's somebody, she'd say, is it a British picture? And what she meant by that is it creaky and is it drab around the edges and is it slightly cronky in that British way? And I mean, there's a lot of things about British cinema that I love as a result of that. It is true that some British cinema doesn't have quite the gloss, the sheen of some Hollywood productions. And the funny thing about Stardust, although there's obviously been a lot of money invested in it, and it's got special effects to spare, there is something creaky and cronky and slightly ill-fitting and slightly botched about it, and slightly it doesn't quite work in perhaps entirely the way it should do. I suppose the most obvious comparison that it would like to draw is with the work of Terry Gilliam, or perhaps the work of Time Bandits, and I don't think it's anywhere like being in that league. Terry Gilliam has a sense of the magical that Matthew Vaughan, I think, just doesn't have. Matthew Vaughan is... Sorry,
we found the clip, by the way, so if in the process of remaining words you feel free to...
I think we're fine. I think I can carry on. Matthew Vaughan is very much a journeyman director. Remember, he directed Layer Cake, and he came in the studio, didn't he?
Craig came in.
Exactly. And he's a nuts and bolts director, in much the same way that Christopher Columbus is a nuts and bolts director of the early Harry Potter movies. I mean, you know, kind of bean counting, get all the stuff in together. But what he doesn't have is he doesn't have the polished sheen of Chris Columbus. So it's a strange thing, because it's not done in the kind of the way of fantastic magical realism that I think somebody like Terry Gilliam would have brought to the project. It's also too long. I mean, it's over 2 hours long, and there's many, many different plot strands, and you do feel that there are times that it's dragging itself along. There are loads and loads of star roles in it. Claire Danes plays the fallen star, and I don't think Claire Danes is quite luminescent enough to play the falling star. I mean, funnily enough, the thing that Claire Danes does really well is kind of down-to-earth, ordinary girl-next-door roles. I mean, in that terrible, terrible film, Shop Girl, she was, you know, she was the perhaps the redeeming feature. We also have Robert De Niro, who of course did cameo in some of Terry Gilliam's movies, playing this camp pirate. And a lot of people have said, oh, the best thing about the film is this marvelous thing which Robert De Niro, you know, flounces around in a tutu and you know, does this with it's that's not true. Robert De Niro flouncing around in a tutu is funny for about 10 seconds, but beyond that it sort of ceases to be funny. So there's an awful lot of things that are wrong with the film. That said, it is still oddly charming and oddly engaging in a kind of strangely rickety, the wheels are going to fall off this at any point, but you know what, I'm kind of going with it anyway way. For one thing, it does seem to have genuine good nature. I mean, it's, you know, it's nicely written. It's I haven't read the thing that it's adapted from, but it, you know, it's perfectly well constructed in the writing department. There's loads of sort of little cameos from people like Ricky Gervais, who just seems to play Ricky Gervais. At one point, the Ricky Gervais character actually says, "You're having a laugh, aren't you?" Which, as far as I remember, is the yeah, tagline.
You'd
from
think
the guy
he'd try
from,
and avoid that.
You would think he would. It's like, you know, you almost expect him to do the funny dance and say, "There's good news and bad news. The good news, yeah, like that." But he does do that anyway. But even with all the things that are wrong, and even with all the things that are plodding, and even with all the things that are slightly hokey, it does have a strangely British charm to it. And
is this the film that's written by Jonathan Ross's wife?
Well, it's adapted by Jane Goldman. Yes,
all
absolutely.
Right, okay.
But I
just heard him talking about it a lot. That's all.
Yeah. Well, I think that's absolutely right, because obviously, yeah, I think he reviewed it on the television. I think it's quite right that he should have to say, you know, incidentally, I'm connected to somebody in the production. But I think that's, you know, it must be. I think she's a writer in her own right. She wrote a couple of books about the X-Files. I mean, she's, you know, she's a writer in her own right. And she's actually done a very good job of adapting the screenplay. The screenplay itself is pretty solid. Like I said, I think in the end, it lacks sparkle in the direction from Matthew Vaughan. It does creak and cronk. It is too long. Some of the casting isn't entirely on the money. And it doesn't have anything like the magical touch of Time Bandits. But I'm telling you this, with no reservations, of the stuff that's out, of the kids' movies that are coming out this half term, it is head and shoulders above the rest. I think that young kids will enjoy it in the right way. And the other thing I wanted to just point out is there's a marvelous thing. If you go to the BBFC website, you know, they give you details on, you know, what film. And the film, it says it contains moderate fantasy violence and scary moments. But there's a new website, PBBFC, which is the parents' British Board of Film Classification. And I would advise anybody to go to it, because it has the most in-depth breakdown of the stuff that's in the movie. If you're worried about, you know, whether your kids were... I mean, it says, for example, the combination of fairy tale and adventure in this story means that the battle between good and evil often results in violence, in bold letters, and occasionally death. However, the film's fantastical nature prevents either the violence, which is mostly sword and sword dueling, or the deaths from being graphic or realistic. There is a joke about somebody looking at their own bottom, and there is a joke. I mean, this is the kind of level
that's
of detail that
we need. But that's what you need. That's exactly what you need.
www.pbbfc.co.uk. I mean, bless them. I mean, I tell you, it's when you're going out to whatever it is you take your kids to this half term, check out the parental BBFC website. There's also, I think, there's
that
a section where parents can add in their own details about what their kids
do. Is it possible to look at your own bottom and have a U certificate? Does that automatically give you a PG?
Well, I think in the way that Michelle Pfeiffer looks at her own bottom, it wouldn't be U certificate.
Oh,
I think it would be parental guidance would be grateful. But as I said, despite all the things that are wrong with it, and there are many, in the end I was charmed, and I liked it enough, and I thought that actually the kids would enjoy it, and its heart is in the right
place. That's very useful. I remember even Toy Story had a PG certificate when it came out, and my kids were at that age thinking, I need to go and see this beforehand. Why is it a PG?
Why was Toy Story
PG? Well, it's because the torture of the toys.
Which
is quite
absolutely
scary. By the way, loads and loads of people saying it was Larry Fishburne in Death Wish 2. And that Jeff Goldblum was in Death Wish 1, my first
date. I stand corrected.
Not something else you're wrong about.
Is that right? No, I that is right. I do stand corrected.
Anyway, just thought we'd point...
There we go.
Thought we'd point that out. What's coming next?
The rest of the kids' movies, up to and including Daddy Day Camp.
On the subject of first dates, and this came about because we were talking about the movie that you had your first date with.
With Near Dark.
And I had... Death Wish 2.
Tony
and Pat say, we've been together for 34 years, married for 32. When I was 18 and she was 19, our first movie was Kosintsev's King Lear in black and white and Russian with subtitles.
Blimey.
How impressive is that?
That's great.
I don't think she's ever watched another movie with subtitles since. That's going to put you off anyone, isn't it? Let's go and see Kosintsev's King Lear. Is it going to be good? Well, it's black and white, and in Russian it's got subtitles. Oh, well, that sounds like an absolute winner then.
But that's like in Annie Hall, when Woody Allen takes Annie Hall to see, what is it, The Sorrow and the Pity? Because they go to see something else, but he misses the beginning, and he has to see it from the beginning. He has to see it right from the very, very beginning. Oh, and instead, of course, technically, Stardust is, you know, American finance, so But I'm talking about British as an aesthetic. Right?
Okay, no, quite understand. So a lot of half-term movies, done Stardust. What else is out?
Well, let's try and rattle through because there's a lot to cover. The Dark is Rising, right? Fantasy. American boy comes to England where he discovers that actually he's the last in a generation of seekers and who have to find a whole bunch of stuff, otherwise the world will come to an end. It's adapted by John Hodge. From a story by Susan Cooper, with the baddie Ryder played by Christopher Eccleston, right? John Hodge wrote did the screenplay for Trainspotting. Christopher Eccleston was in Shallow Grave, which John Hodge also wrote. And it's described again by the BBFC 12A for sustained threat, moderate fantasy violence and horror. All that sounds good, doesn't it? Shall we have a clip?
Yes.
Shall we try?
Yes, let's try.
You're frightened of me. You should be, Will. I'm very angry. All this time it was you. Give me the sign.
What? Sign.
Give it me now!
I don't know what you're talking about.
Leave him be!
Leave the boy alone, Ryder! You can't fight us all. You're not strong enough.
Not yet, but I will be. You and all your kind will be destroyed.
Now, despite the promise of fantasy, violence and horror, I always think the kids ought to see horror movies. I think horror is good for them. The Dark is Rising, and I was walking down a high street the other day, and I looked in a charity shop window, and there was a novel by somebody.
Sure, it was a novel.
Yeah, it was a big thing, right?
No chance of it being a novella.
No chance of it being a novella. This was a big weighty.
Did it have a Wendepunkt?
I've got no idea because I didn't read it. I just looked at the front cover, which said Barry Trotter. It was Barry Trotter and the Unashamed Parody, right? And it was obviously somebody sort of cashed in the Harry Potter thing by doing a Barry Trotter novel. And I have to say that the name Barry Trotter was the name that leapt into my mind whilst watching Dark is Rising, because you just think the bar on this sort of stuff has been raised very heavily, not only by the Harry Potter novels, which incidentally I am now, of course, reading to my kids, as you promised me I would, and as is now always coming true, everything that you say is right does turn out to be right, and I'm just having to relive my life in the knowledge that television isn't the Antichrist after all, and and you're correct and Neil Young's great, blah-de-blah-de-blah. You watch Dark is Rising and you just think, this is no longer good enough. I mean, it's a shambles. It's all over the place. There's loads of special effects. It's trying very hard. I mean, I think John Hodge is a great screenwriter, and I can only assume that we don't have on screen the proper version of what his vision ought to be. Even Christopher Eccleston seems oddly uncomfortable in the role. I think Christopher Eccleston is terrific. I mean, obviously, people quickly forget that he was the guy who relaunched Doctor Who, although Doctor Who has subsequently become really wonderful under the... Who is him now? What's his name?
Doctor Who?
Who's the guy who plays Doctor Who now? Him.
Him. David Tennant.
Tennant, fine. Who obviously is great and is up there with, we're all suffering.
How stupid not
this.
To be able to remember it instantly.
Is up there with John Pertwee and, Patrick Troughton. But the fact is it was relaunched by Christopher Eccleston, and he's a great actor, but Dark is Rising is a strange mess. There's some scenery change from Ian McShane and plodding stuff from everybody else. You just sit there thinking, it's a Barry Trotter book. It's not great. Neither is The Last Legion. 12A, frequent moderate fantasy action violence and battle scenes, which again sounds good to me. On the poster, there's a tagline which says, "Before King Arthur, there was Excalibur."
Oh, yeah, I've seen the poster.
Right, to which one is tempted to add, yeah, and after 300 took some money, we thought that we'd better try and sell this to you with a poster that looks a little bit like 300, but actually kind of isn't. And what you have is this bizarre fall of the Roman Empire story in which there's a young kid, he's running around, a whole bunch of stuff happening, he has to search for a magical sword. I was going to play you a clip, but I'm kind of...
No, I want to hear one.
Okay, fine. You know, when he's good, he's very good. And when he's bad, he's Gandhi. Let's hear a clip.
And this is also Caesar's will?
Now, you've been well rewarded. Go back where you came from.
My crime is putting new ideas into a young head, teaching a lad to think for himself.
This lad is our emperor. Which do you serve? Caesar? Or your own ideas?
A wise man never asks what another man serves.
For only his actions will speak the true answer.
You've read your Seneca.
I find poets as dangerous as philosophers. And you?
Where did you get this?
A long time ago. In another land. From a man who loved only power.
So you're an adventurer as well.
If I see you again in Rome, it'll be on the point of my sword.
Take care in the mist, Commander. It may hide what the gods themselves dare not look upon.
When he's good, he's very good, and when he's bad, he's Merlin. I mean, the strange thing here is, you see, I like Colin Firth very much, and I would almost watch anything that Colin Firth was in, because I think he's a really engaging actor, and I think he's got much more depth than perhaps he's sometimes credited with. And you look at Last Legion, and it's produced by the De Laurentiis clan, so therefore it has at least some level of production value thrown in it, and yet it looks so wretchedly hokey. And I'm sitting there thinking, this is what happens when Gladiator wins the award for Best Picture 7 years ago, and there's a trickle-down effect. You know, people always talk about the trickle-down effect of great wealth will somehow sort of, you know, reflect fabulously on the poor. Yep. And there's this idea that in Hollywood, any blockbuster that you have will then trickle down a whole bunch of other things that will come out. After it. So you have at the beginning Gladiator, which suddenly everyone says, you know, you can make sword and sandal movies again, that's perfectly fine. And then a little few years later you have Troy, and then a few years later you have The Last Legion, and this is where it ends up. And it's one of those really strange experiences when you think, if I was a kid and I wanted 12 A certificate, you know, fighting and heroism and sandals and a bit of magic and a bit of this and a bit of that, and I just think, isn't Lilo and Stitch on somewhere else? Can't we go home and watch the DVD?
If you're looking for a 12A with fighting, you're not going to go and watch Lilo and Stitch, are you?
I think, funnily enough, you'd find more to get your teeth into in Lilo and Stitch. Lilo and Stitch is an edgier movie than you remember it as being. No, it is.
No, it's not.
It's funny. It's weird.
If I had to choose tonight between going to see The Last Legion or Lilo and Stitch, I am going to go and see The Last Legion.
Okay, if I had to choose tonight between seeing The Last Legion and Daddy Day Camp, and I'm going to do this after the travel,
yeah,
I would go and see The Last Legion on a continuous loop in a 24-hour cinema playing back-to-back from now until the end of half-term.
Is there anything with David Morrissey or Jason Isaacs in this week?
Not immediately to hand, no.
Hello to both of them anyway.
Hello to both of them.
Listening on podcasts, wherever they may be.
David Cronenberg incidentally did confirm that he was down to direct Basic Instinct 2, and he wanted it to happen, but it didn't.
On the subject of date movies, this is because we were talking earlier about, you know, you can tell a lot about your relationship by the first movie that you go with your other half to see. Hi, guys. For a date movie, I went to see Norbit. With a stunning blonde pole dancer. She found the movie hilarious and kept quoting Murphy's various characters for a week after. I, on the other hand, found the movie a tad more annoying than The Good Doctor and realised that even though this girl had a body to die for, with looks to match, there was really very little between her ears to keep the relationship going. I finished with her, and 6 months later, I wish I'd remained shallow. My girlfriend and I says this went to see American Psycho.
Oh, yeah, I like American Psycho.
First movie,
yeah.
First date.
That's a good...
Half an hour from the end, she turned to me and said, "That's you, that is." End of a beautiful relationship, which you can imagine it would be.
It would be. Although if somebody turned to me and said that, because it's Christian, but I would say that, yes, I mean, I think he's a terrific actor.
Nick in Bicester. Hi, guys. Me and the girl from HMV went to see United 93 our first movie. We didn't speak for an hour afterwards. I buy my music online now. Cheers, says Nick. And Stuart, Daddy Day Camp is a sequel to Daddy Daycare with Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
This sequel is so bad that he didn't return, and he made Norbit.
So continuing the...
somebody, because someone said, I've just had the rather unpleasant view of the Good Doctor standing and plucking his underpants from where they were lodged. Please remind him that there are children and those of a nervous disposition watching.
Don't wear underpants. Boxer shorts, excuse me.
Do beg your pardon. Anyway, so we're nicely teed up.
21st century.
Nicely teed up for Daddy Day Camp.
Very quickly, just to say Nancy Drew, which is a totally witless updating of the old Nancy Drew stories set in a modern setting, but you wouldn't know. No, I know, I'm just doing it very quickly, just to say you wouldn't know it, and it has none of the charm of the Nancy Drew stories that anyone would remember. PG contains infrequent, mild language, violence and threat, and also is just rubbish all the way around. I sat there thinking, would my daughter like this? And the answer was, I really sincerely hope not. But... this brings us all to Daddy Day Camp. As has been already said, the original did star Eddie Murphy, and Eddie Murphy ain't back for the sequel. In the original, there was these guys who were the businessmen, and everything was falling apart, and they set up a daycare centre. And it's Eddie Murphy, of course, you know that recently there was a scandal of Eddie Murphy and the fatherhood thing, in which he was the father of a child that he said he wasn't the father of. Honestly, parental skills, obviously, totally fantastic and wonderful, but for some reason, he didn't want to go back near this again. So who are we going to get for Daddy Day Camp? The story is the same character, because it's got the same name, at least anyway, now decides that what they want to do is take on a camp, you know, a school camp like they have in America. Although, oddly, I have to say, reminiscent of Camp Blood, Camp Crystal Lake from the Friday the 13th, everything falling off. You can go to that camp. It's up in, it's in upstate New York, and it's called Camp Nobby Bosco. And in real life, it's actually sort of rather smashing. But, you know, as
really
it,
rather smashing.
It is.
That's a good phrase.
But as it looks, you know, in this movie here, it's, you know, it's like Camp Blood. It's a horrible rundown camp. Next door to it is a Wizzo fantastic camp, which has got mountain bikes and exciting games and paintballing and kids doing stuff and blah de blah de blah. But our hero decides to take over the old camp, which is about to be shut down, and turn it into something workable. And a whole bunch of stuff happens, like, for example, the toilet explodes because of a build-up of methane, which throws poop all over the place, which in many ways is a metaphor for the film itself. Now, the film is excrementally terrible. It is one of those bury your head, you know, between your knees, adopt the brace position. It's going to take a long time. It's going to be painful. It's going to hurt everyone. Kids aren't going to enjoy it, because one of the things that the film is attempting to say is, look, this rundown camp, actually, it's great. It's got heart. These people in this camp next door, which has got money, is a load of rubbish. Any kid worth their salt will say, I'm sorry, I want to be in the camp next door. I want to be in the one with the mountain bikes and the action and the paintballing. I don't care about the nitwits taking over this other camp. The other thing is, if kids go and see it, it's a very, very bad portrait of how kids should be looked after by parents. I mean, actually, there are legal repercussions of this. Nobody should allow their children to be looked after by the people who are running this day camp. It's not funny or entertaining. It's just worrying. You're just thinking about health and safety the whole time. I mean, I'm literally sitting there thinking, this is not legal. Any minute the police are going to turn up. The worst thing, of course, is Cuba Gooding Jr. And it's, you know, we can't get Eddie Murphy. Who shall we get? Let's get Cuba Gooding Jr. And I just, what happened to his career? What, I mean, didn't you once ask him this question? Didn't you interview him?
What, interview Cuba Gooding Jr.?
And say, what happened to your career? But you said it in a kind of tactful way.
No, I don't think so.
You know, he won an Oscar. He was on the Oscar stage.
Didn't you used to be good?
Yes, he was on the Oscar stage giving what is perhaps, you know, the greatest Oscar acceptance speech of all time, jumping up and down and screaming and shouting and doing, you know, it's way, everything's, you know, and he was.
There isn't a tactful way of doing that.
Well, so
you used to be really successful,
and now look what's happened.
No,
and
it's, I don't think you can do that.
You know, you look at the movies that he's made since then. I mean, Pearl Harbor. Okay, that actually represents a high point in terms of what he's done since then. He was in Snow Dogs. He was in Boat Trip. I mean, Boat Trip is the kind of film that you'd be embarrassed to have made before your career got off the ground, and now this. So, in amidst all the, I mean, believe me, don't take your kids to see it, because they're not going to find it funny or entertaining, and you're not going to find it funny or entertaining. You're just going to sit there with your hand over your mouth, desperately trying not to scream or to attack the screen. But also, in a heartbreaking sense of sadness, what's happened to the man's career that this is what he has been reduced to? It's just, it's, you know, it's not even, I mean, sometimes I enjoy having a go at films, but in this case, I just feel a sense of, you know, that thing your parents say, I'm not angry.
Just very, very disappointed.
Very, very disappointed. And that is how I felt. I mean, Daddy Day Camp, it was just a low point. It was just an absolute low point, but I wasn't even in the film. I mean, imagine if you had to wake up in the morning and know that you'd been in it.
Just to be absolutely clear, you can watch the Cronenberg interview. It's going to be available on the Five Live website from Monday.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Something for the grown-ups?
Yeah, I was going to say movies for grown-ups. Forget about the kids. Leave them at home and go out, and, well, you know, with care, with making sure there's someone there.
Making sure they're not being looked after by Cuba Gooding Jr.
There's
his
a hand
friends
to rock
from
the
this.
Cradle.
Incidentally, just to complete, Daddy Day Camp PG contains mild language, crude behaviour and comic violence with infrequent mild sex references.
And an awful lot of disappointment.
That's enough to put you off anyway, isn't it? So, best film of the week by Country Mile is Once, which is this charming and really, I think, emotionally engaging, no-budget Irish movie that was a real audience winner at Sundance, cost nothing at all, has already taken several millions, comparatively several millions, in the international market. Story is a guy, and he's a nameless guy, played by Glenn Hansard, is a busker in Dublin. He's singing songs on the street about the regret that he feels that his girlfriend has gone off and left him, and he wants her back. Along comes Marketa Iglova, who's a girl. Again, she doesn't have a name, and she needs her vacuum cleaner fixed. And it turns out the guy fixes vacuum cleaners. And she says, incidentally, that song you're playing is absolutely beautiful. If you record that for your girlfriend, she'll definitely come back to you. And whilst I'm about it, I play the piano. Let's start working together. And they start playing these songs together. And the narrative then plays out through the course of their song.
And as you were saying last week, when we were talking to them that the songs are actually fundamental to the plot.
They are fundamental to the plot, and what's beautiful about it in the same way as Brief Encounter is that the relationship that they have isn't boy meets girl, falls in love again. In fact, because he's in love with somebody else and she has a husband elsewhere. Let's hear a clip.
You have him.
I didn't say that.
I'll say. Mr. L. Ebert.
That's not once, that's rendition.
Well, let's see if you can work rendition into it. Then.
Okay, fine. There's another movie out called Rendition, which is about the art of rendition, and it has Meryl Streep in it. But that's not that one. But I'll do the clip for you. It goes like this.
Yeah.
It goes, do you love him? Well,
I don't think so.
What's the in your language for do you love him? And then she said, yeah, no, it's not going to work, is it? Okay, let's just talk about it. It's one of those films in which the musical structure works really perfectly, because what you have is the narrative being advanced by the songs and the songs actually being sung by the performers. I think it really helps that the songs are as good as they are. I mean, there's one just particularly heartbreaking song in it, which they perform it as a duet. They go into a piano showroom because she doesn't have a piano. But in the piano showroom, they allow her to play the piano. And she starts playing this song that he's written. He's got the music written, and he starts singing. He's got a terrific voice. Of course, you know him. Was he in the Frames?
Something like that.
Yeah, and he was in the Commitments. People know him from that anyway. And he's got a really, really great busking voice. And they start singing this song, and it's really moving and really enchanting and really great in the way that you can only get with actors, with musicians doing the music rather than actors miming the music. The other thing that I really like about it is that although it's handheld and jerky, definitely done on a sort of small budget, and it's a little guerrilla-like project, it has a bigger scope to it. It doesn't feel like a tiny little movie. Once you get into it, because of the scope of the music, it actually feels like a much bigger landscape than perhaps the visuals would allow it to be. I was genuinely charmed by it. I thought, some people have said it's one song too long, and I don't agree with that at all. I could sit there and listen to those songs over and over again. I thought it was really something special, and I'm really glad that it's done as well as it has, and it really deserves to find a place in your heart.
All the songs original?
As far as I understand. But hey, listen, what do I know about popular music? If somebody started playing a song by the Sugar Beans and it wasn't original, I wouldn't know.
So is that the only
the other thing out very thing? Quickly.
Is it rendition?
Should we do rendition very quickly? There are, we won't play a clip because we don't have time. There are a number of movies coming up which deal with Iraq and the fallout of the war against terror. There's things like this. Brian De Palma's Redacted is coming up. There's a film by Paul Haggis called In the Valley of Allah. There is a Robert Redford movie, Lions for Lambs. And in the middle of all this, you have Rendition, which is directed by Gavin Hood, who made the film Totsi, which is a very, very interesting movie, and I thought it had a real edge to it. In this, what happens is that in the wake of a bombing in North Africa, somebody is picked up by the CIA, and they are rendered. They are taken to another country, and they are tortured. It's a tough movie. It's very, very politically balanced, I think perhaps more so than it needs to be. We are told, for example, that it was under Clinton that Rendition started, and I think it's more melodramatic than it needs to be. But I think it's solid in its intent, if not in its result.
Phil Williams is your host on Monday, and guess who his guest is? Michael Winner.
Really?
Provider of great date movies, as I think. So, movie of the week?
Once. Clearly. See it once, see it twice.
Kids movie of the week?
Stardust.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.